How do you feel about homework? I'll tell you that as a student, I didn't love it. I often made excuses, and I put it off whenever I knew that they weren't going to check it completely, and I was able to kind of skate by in school, to be honest. As a teacher, I prided myself on the fact that I always assigned homework to my students, and I thought I was doing them a favor by making them work hard and practice. My opinions have changed a lot. Homework is something that comes up really frequently when I'm attending an IEP meeting for a family or when I'm working with a kid who's struggling with school. So I thought I would take a look at a few resources and have a conversation today about what I feel is good practice and the questions we should be asking about homework for kids. So thanks for joining me. Well, this is episode 17. I'm Casey. I record these episodes of the Parent Teacher Podcast because I wanted to have a place where parents or teachers or anybody working with kids can come and listen to relevant topics. In the past, I was a teacher and a college professor working in a special education program, and I'm also a parent of two kids, and I work primarily as an advocate on behalf of families. So I'm often called in when people want information about the services that their kids are entitled to, or if communication is broken down with the school. And so I frequently work with the teams, and that's why I hold these conversations. Today the conversation is with myself. I don't have a guest. But I really wanted to dig into a little bit more about what people think about homework, because I hear such varied ideas when we start to talk about this in a meeting. So, you know, is it important, and what does the research say, and how do we modify this when students need it? I think these are all good questions, and I don't think I have all the answers, but I thought I would share with you my perspective, and as always, ask you to disagree with me or chime in if you have any thoughts. You can always contact me through my website, which is reorientedadvocacy.com, and you can also leave messages through Anchor FM, and there are links to those in the show notes. So, you know, one thing I start off with right off the bat is that recently we talked about the trap of extended time. When kids have an identified disability and they have a 504 plan or an IEP, we are talking about accommodations they might have, and really frequently kids are given extended time, you know, particularly for tests, but also in some cases for homework. And I think that that can be a trap, you know, because we can't make more time. So you can listen to the previous episode of that on accommodations and modifications to see some of the suggestions and thoughts I have on that. But, you know, in talking about homework, I think we really need to consider, what is the purpose of the task? You know, what is the purpose of the homework? Is it to reinforce a skill? Is it to build mastery? If it is math fact fluency, is it spelling words? You know, what is the purpose of it? Also, you have to consider, how clear are the instructions? How clear are the directions to follow? How well organized? And also, I think that we should all be considering, you know, what is the value that this task has over time that a kid could be spending elsewhere. I'm not advocating for getting rid of all school responsibilities outside of school. You know, I kind of go back and forth on this. I think of the saying, the obstacle is the way, right? Because there are so many opportunities to build in good habits like time management and organization through having these responsibilities and having external supports. And there's also the concept of, you know, choosing your battles. And so I'm going to break that down a little more, where I think each may be appropriate. I'm linking to an article that was published in The Atlantic, and it was about homework, how much is too much. And it presented two different researchers that will come up frequently if you do any looking into the research on homework. The first is Cooper. I didn't list all of his information, but basically, we're talking about a mid-2000s like analysis of multiple studies, and this kind of reinforced the 10-minute rule, this concept of that kids should be responsible for 10 minutes of homework for each grade that they're in. So, you know, in second grade, kids could be doing 20 minutes of homework, in third grade, 30, and scaling up from there. I find when I'm working with students, the amount of time is all over the place, and it really depends on a kid's processing speed, for one thing. And it can really vary from task to task. But I do agree that if, you know, we're exceeding, let's say, 60 minutes of homework a night for a middle schooler every night, that may be excessive. I think it's a okay sort of generalized rule of thumb. But basically, Cooper broke it down to say that as kids get older, the expectation of how much homework they should be doing should increase. And he found a correlation to the amount of time kids spend doing homework with how well they do on tests. I mean, I don't think that's a surprise, because if I think back to, well, high school and even before that, we used the Saxon math program. I don't know, maybe some of you also had that, where it was really breaking down by algorithm. You would practice a certain skill kind of in isolation. And then, you know, you would do the homework and come to class the next day. We would correct it with the rest of the class. And then you would take one test at the end of the week. So really all of the grades were based on the test. And in my case, if the teacher wasn't checking the homework, pretty often I wasn't doing the homework, to be honest, until I really had to get my act together. And I would know I had to do that because the test scores would be super low. I'm going to talk in a minute about what happens when the reverse is true, because sometimes I'm seeing kids who do miserably on the homework or never do the homework and they ace the test. So you can see that's a completely different type of problem. So yeah, Cooper is cited pretty frequently. There's a book I really like that I reference really often. It's not Strategies That Work. It's Classroom Instruction That Works. This was a research-based, you know, practices for student achievement. I think our principal had handed it out at one point. But, you know, it's a few years old. It's several years old. But Robert Marzano was in on this one, and he's one of my favorites. So in this book, it does break down best practice, and it does talk about Cooper. And, you know, it's basically saying that there is a correlation between how much practice kids do and how well they perform on the tests. So the issue with this is, you know, that research can be cherry-picked and numbers can be kind of manipulated. And we have Kahn. He is the author of The Homework Myth. And you can find the book. I'm linking to another article by him. So it's Elfie, I believe it's pronounced Kahn, but I'm not sure. I could be corrected on that too. The article I'm linking to says Homework, No Proven Benefits, Why Homework is a Pointless and Outdated Habit. And I won't go too much into this. I think the title says it all. I think it's a little too black and white, but, you know, I don't disagree that keeping kids on task and working quietly after a full day of being on task and working quietly may not be a very productive practice in a lot of cases. And I think that in some place I had seen that he says, you know, it really just sucks the joy out of learning. I'm paraphrasing here. So these are the two guys that kind of went back and forth on this. I mean, I think we're talking about a pretty gray area, and that it's probably determined by the culture of the school. So I think that you do have to weigh in the socioeconomic factors. I'd seen somewhere that, you know, particularly white parents in wealthier areas may actually push for more homework because they want to be super competitive on tests. But in my experience working in the city, I saw parents of all different kinds of backgrounds asking if their kids were working hard enough to be competitive with others. So I'm a little skeptical of any of these assumptions that I see. I think that basically here are the positives about homework. For kids with ADHD in particular, for kids who have any type of an executive functioning need where they are not good at self-monitoring, they are not good at self-regulation, they need to build skills like time management or organization, prioritizing tasks, planning. you know, homework does provide a lot of opportunity to practice these things outside of school. I guess I wish that we were practicing these things in school where the support was available. I also think that there's not always a lot of time. And so, you know, as Cooper said, particularly in the older grades, you know, using that out of class time for students to do some of their independent learning would be really helpful. And, you know, not just for fluency practice. I brought up math and spelling, which seem kind of like no-brainers, but also in novel study or when you have reading to do. Pre-reading materials or rereading materials can be really helpful because for anyone who's tried to teach a language arts class to a full room of students, really at any level, you know the challenge that there is in trying to cover the content of the book and the learning goals. There's just never enough time. So I can see how, you know, it is a positive if it's a predictable schedule and you've built in a homework expectation with your class. So here's how I would break it down. If you require that your students do homework, and often this isn't up to you, right? Then you should really be careful of the following things. These are some of the top concerns I have. You know, number one, you don't want to use a homework assignment to assess a child's understanding or mastery. So, you know, when I was supervising student teachers, we'd frequently ask that they tell, you know, it like how their kids did it on an assessment after every lesson. So, you know, in a lot of cases, we encourage teachers to use exit tickets. We want to use formative assessment and informal assessment. But if you're running out of time in class, you don't want to send it home as homework and then accept the information that you get back is going to give you a really good idea of what that kid understands because you don't know what kind of support that child had. You don't know if it's an older sister, a friend, or a parent that is weighing in on this. I mean, it's better if it's relevant to the class stuff, but that's going to be a challenge too. So do not use the homework to assess mastery. You're going to have to find a different way to use the homework and to provide feedback, which we'll get to in a minute. The other thing is watch how you weight your grade book. Because I just brought up the student who maybe, you know, in some cases, teachers aren't grading any homework, and then you have students that are failing a test, which is telling because they probably aren't practicing. And in some cases, you're going to have students who are passing the test, getting an A, they understand the content and all of the learning objectives in the course, and they're failing the class because they aren't getting the homework done or they aren't turning it in. So, you know, watch how you weigh this and pay attention to these patterns that students have within your class. You know, what is the point of doing the homework if they already know all of the concepts that are going to be on the test? So, we'll talk about that purpose part in a second. The other thing is don't change the format of your assignments that you send home. You don't want to have a bunch of different types of assignments or places to find them. Even when I was teaching online courses for college students, I remember somewhere seeing a suggestion of you don't want to use more than two or three types of platforms for the work that they're going to do independently. So I might use Flipgrid responses once a week to respond to reading and a written response piece and, you know, a group discussion. That sounds redundant. It's a very quick example, but you wouldn't want to be sending kids to a variety of different apps to complete homework or doing an article study and annotations and going to a website or like a trying to think of one of the apps. You know what I mean. You really want to keep it simple. Most kids really respond well to having the same structure in place or, you know, a simple set of structures because you don't want to be penalizing a kid for not knowing how to do the assignment instead of not understanding the concepts that you're teaching, right? The other thing is a lot of times when I see kids are having trouble, it's because it's not the homework that is assigned. You know, maybe on the syllabus or the weekly schedule, a lot of times we're trying to post in advance which homework's coming up and which assignments and which projects. But where we really get into trouble is when kids have to finish at home. So when you start a project in class, maybe you're doing a science lab or you have groups that are doing a reflection or annotating something, and you don't get it done in class, and then so you say, you know, whatever is not done in class is finish at home. That can be okay. It could probably encourage kids to use their time wisely in some cases, but be careful of how you're using it. If it is unpredictable and, you know, it's not on the schedule and they're not used to it, you should make it really clear that that's part of the classroom structure. Because in a lot of cases, it might be that the child had a hard time completing the task in school because it takes them a long time, and now it's going to take them a long time at home. So I'm saying try to keep it predictable. And the other part of it is that if you have kids who struggle with inattention, you know, and you're assigning it while they're working on something in class or while there's confusion, I'm just thinking of all the things that might contribute to the pacing of that lesson being off and you needing to send it home with a kid. So if you're a parent and you're wondering about these missing assignments too, I would say definitely pay attention to this. If the assignments that aren't being turned in are things that were homework because they were started in class and then sent home, I just feel like there could be so many factors, and most of them are controlled by the teacher regarding the pacing of the class, you know, not enough time allowed, the directions weren't very clear, were the resources hard to, you know, to find. And so just saying like you'll finish the rest at home if it was maybe unclear in class is going to be problematic. Very different if you say every Tuesday we're having a lab, or every Tuesday you're reading a story with your group, and if you don't finish the questions in class, you will take it home that night. That is much different. And the other thing is the feedback. So if kids are doing homework, and again, I have been here, I would assign a packet of work to do from our language arts curriculum, and they would bring them all back. And then, you know, if you're going to assign it, you want to provide feedback. And the feedback has to be timely. You can't be collecting the work and the practice that kids did all week before a test, and then collecting it on Friday and giving the test right then, and then maybe you get to grading it over the weekend and hand it back. The whole point of them practicing is to do well on the assessment piece, I would think, right? Or, you know, to learn it. So if you're letting them learn it the wrong way, or you're not clearing up some misconceptions, and that's not guiding your teaching, then we have a problem. So there is probably a whole other episode and many resources on good, efficient ways to give students feedback. Maybe, you know, if you're doing math, you have them self-assess, or they grade with a partner, they grade their own, they flag it, you know, grade only a sample of problems. But you should be covering the homework in class or providing the kids with feedback. And back to the strategies that workbook, one of the suggestions in there, and I agree, is providing feedback in a variety of ways. Some kids respond really well to, you know, a conversation. This looks good. You did this. You need to practice that. Some kids do well with written feedback. And you definitely want to provide some written feedback on the homework assignments. And the more you can keep the systems consistent and the rubrics consistent and the way that you grade consistent, and then tell students this is why you didn't have a good score and this is how we make it better, you know, the better they're going to be able to do. And then probably the more willing they're going to be to work for you. The other note I have on here, besides being timely with grading homework, is the titles are sometimes inconsistent. And what I'm thinking is that a lot of schools use programs like Canvas or Google Classroom, or, you know, in the college level, Chalkboard and Moodle. I'm thinking of these technologies where you post assignments. And so when you do that, make sure that the grade book, the evaluation piece, or the feedback matches up with the way that you assigned it in class, because I just see so many families grappling with that. You know, if you assign something as chapters 4 through 6 questions, and then in the gradebook it says, you know, character study on Elfie, then we got a problem. So you really have to be mindful of that as a teacher as well. And I don't think it's bad to push for that consistency if you're a parent either. And then, you know, finally, especially if things come up that were unexpected in class and you're taking it home or you adjust the instruction, it's always great to have a syllabus and a schedule in advance to share with your class so that they can plan their time accordingly. But You should also be making sure that you are clear on the purpose of the homework and that your students are as well. They really need to understand why it's important in the larger scheme of learning. So I think of the practice of using a statement of purpose. You know, this is something when you do a lesson plan, I always said you should talk about what you've learned before, the part you're practicing today, and what it's going to lead to. And one of my greatest concerns when I talk to students who are struggling in school is they'll talk about the tasks they do in each class. And I'll say, well, in language arts, what do you do? And they say, well, we read a book and we answer the questions. Okay, well, what types of questions? Well, they're comprehension questions. Okay, and what are the learning goals? What are the objectives or the standards? You know, in the past in Chicago, they would have us post the I can statements on the board. But, you know, kids should always be aware of what they're learning and why. So it's not the book that they're learning. They might be learning about cause and effect. They might be learning, well, they're always learning about citing evidence, right? That's one of the common core standards. But your students should be able to tell you the purpose of the homework related to the learning goal. And parents, if kids aren't able to tell you the purpose behind the assignment, you know, then that would make me wonder, you know, is it really a well thought out assignment? Is it a good use of their time? You know, whether you have any control over that, I don't know. I guess it really depends on your situation. But especially if it's leading to problems with grades and you have an opportunity to talk about this at an IEP, considering, you know, what is the purpose of the assignment is very important. And teachers, you know, if you should be checking for understanding on this and knowing your students well enough that some of them will need support in making sure that they have written down the right thing. I think we put checks for understanding in accommodations really generically, but when you have students who you know struggle with attention, organization, etc., and you're going to assign homework, then I think it is your responsibility as an educator to check in with those kids and make sure that they're clear on what they're going to need to do before they leave the classroom. Because this will really pile on when they leave the elementary setting and have multiple teachers in multiple subjects. Contacting 3 to 4 different teachers about, you know, 3 to 4 different assignments or projects gets just really, really hard, not only on the students, but also their parents who support them. So if you can lean over their shoulder or require that they write it down, you know, what do I have to do? What materials do I need? What is the purpose even? Then you are doing them a major favor by making sure that's clear before they leave your room. So that is not an answer to is homework good or bad? And it's not an answer to how much homework should kids have to do? And is it good for them? But it is a list of, I think, some of the pros and cons. And more importantly, it's food for thought on what type of work should be going home and taking up space in our students' lives outside of school. So I hope it was helpful in some way. Again, you can see the list of those articles and that book that I referred to in the show notes. And eventually at my blog. Again, my site is reorientedadvocacy.com. And if you have any questions about homework and best practice, particularly when developing an IEP or accommodations or writing independent functioning goals, you should get in touch with me. You can reach me there. So thanks very much. I'm excited to bring you another episode shortly. We'll be talking about assistive technology and the difficulty some students have with math, particularly when they have executive functioning challenges. So that will be coming up soon. Thanks again. Take care, everybody.